All right, everybody, thanks for joining us. A quick heads up, being we're in the middle of the holidays here, I expect that calls and questions are going to be really light. Probably only going to record an hour today, but if you want to get through, right now is your chance. If you've got a question, a comment, a topic, anything at all you want to talk about, press 1 on your phone. The sooner you do that, the better the chances we will get to you. So if you press 1 on your phone right now, I promise I'll get to you. We're going to go ahead and get started.
Your money, your taxes, your truck. Road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs,
back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. We take your calls and answer your questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, health and fitness on the road, getting started as an owner-operator, finding freight, working with brokers, building a fleet, buying and selling trucks, you name it. We'll tackle it here on this show. All you have to do is pick up the phone and give me a call. We're going to get to those calls in just a little bit. It is that time of year. You know, I've been saying this since October, but it really, really is that time of year. You've got to get your accounting taken care of now. Don't wait. In fact, there's so many things that you could and should be doing right now. Freight is slow. The holidays, not a whole lot of work gets done. Take this time to really get set up and make this year your best. Look back over 2015, what worked, what didn't work, what did you want to accomplish in 2015 but didn't get to it, and start writing those things down and planning for 2016. Let me give you the number one thing on your list. If you want to make 2016 the best year yet, plan on coming to the CMC this year. It's not that far away. May 16th through the 20th. So it's actually, it's getting close. This is something you want to plan for. We've been doing the CMC. You know, I know we have a lot of new listeners. I should probably explain the program a little bit. CMC stands for Certified Master Contractor. Program we started over 10 years ago and has grown tremendously. I remember the first year that I did this, there were sometimes I only had, I think my smallest group was 11 people when we got started. But over the years, this program has grown tremendously. We're very excited about it. The last 3 years, we've been sold out. So 2016, we are moving to a much larger venue. We've been in Kansas City for the last 7 years, and we just outgrew the place. That's why we've been sold out for 3 years. So we moved it to Council Bluffs, Iowa, right smack dab in the middle of the country, easy to get to for everybody. We are at the Mid-America Center, which is right there where 80 and 29 cross. Again, really easy to get to, very truck-friendly area. You get off the exit there, either 80 or 29, and you're right there at the Mac Center. There's a couple truck stops there. There are truck dealers, parts, you name it. Lots of parking this year. We have the entire Mid-America Center for the whole week. Nobody else is there. So we have the arena, the show floor, the meeting rooms, the parking lot. We have just amazing stuff scheduled this year. And we have business education for everybody, no matter what your situation is in trucking. If you are brand new and you want to become an owner-operator, a fleet owner, whatever it might be, and you don't even know where to start, we've got an entire week set up for you. I'm going to teach. We're calling them lanes this year. We have three lanes. And lane one is all about how to get started, how to buy your first truck, how to find your first carrier or get your business set up the way you want it, accounting, budgeting, you name it, how to finance that truck, how to find the money to get started in business. I'm going to cover all kinds of things. And again, that's I'm teaching that lane because that's one of my favorite things, helping people get started. So if you want to be an owner-operator, a fleet owner, whatever it might be, and you just, you want to do it right, you want to avoid all the mistakes, this year, on top of the CMC, we actually have what we're calling the 1-2-3 plan. I've got an ebook coming out shortly that is going to be free, telling you all the ways to avoid all the startup mistakes. Then we have our program, our full-blown program, Stop Holding the Steering Wheel and Start Driving Your Business. That's available right now. And then we have Lane 1 in the CMC. If you do those three steps, I guarantee you will succeed. Hands down, no question about it. Lane 2 at the CMC is primarily designed for people who own a truck. You're already in business and you want to know how to make the most money possible. And it's a really general, it's general in the sense that it is designed primarily for people leased to a carrier, but you're going to learn a lot of things about business in lane two and profit and all kinds of things. Lane three is designed for people who are carriers, they have their own authority, or want to become carriers. And we've got some really exciting things going on in that lane, hiring drivers, building a fleet, getting direct customers. We're going to teach you all kinds of things that week. Plus, every morning, every night, lots of extra events going on. We're going to have some health education and screening this year. You'll get to pick and choose the things you want to do this year. So if you want to make 2016 your year, the time is right now. Get signed up for the CMC. I think we have over 300 people already signed up. 500 is the limit this year, so there is still time and space, but don't wait. I really think that now, once we're into 2016, those last couple hundred seats might go pretty quick. So two ways, you can go right to the website, letstruck.com. Go to the events tab. You can sign yourself up online. It only takes about $100 to get your space locked in. And then we have a payment plan, very simple. Or you can call us if you have any questions. We'll answer all your questions and get you registered and get you going. Come and join us this year in Council Bluffs, Iowa, May 16th through the 20th. You can give us a call at 855-800-FUEL. All right, we're going to get to some phone calls. We're going to start off in Memphis today. Michael, welcome to the program.
How you doing, Kevin?
Good. What's on your mind today?
I noticed y'all, I'm fixing to get a battery or that ESN that y'all have in your store. I'm fixing to order it from your store here in the next month or so. And I was just wondering, is there a battery best suited that works in conjunction with those best for the other three Group 31s, or should I go bigger, smaller, or what should I go with from the other three batteries once I get that ESM installed?
That's a really good question, and let's talk about that in general, and then I'll tell you exactly which battery I would choose. So in today's trucks, batteries have to perform two major functions. It used to be batteries really only performed one. If we go back, you know, when I got started, and especially if we're talking about mechanical engines, the batteries did one thing. They started the truck. That was about it. So you wanted cold cranking amps. Now, though, we need batteries to start the truck, and we need batteries for what's referred to as a hotel load, meaning refrigerators, inverters, computers, electronics, all the stuff we have in our trucks now, TVs, satellites, you name it. So the problem there is it really takes two different kinds of batteries, one with a lot of cold cranking amps and the other one that has the ability to be charged and discharged over and over and over. And the beauty of having the ESM, the Maxwell Engine Start Module, is that takes care of starting the truck. That's all that battery or that capacitor is designed to do is start the truck, and it does it really well. Now that we've taken care of the starting the truck part, now we can get batteries that are optimal for running the hotel loads. So we don't have to compromise anymore. We can have one to start three to run all your hotel loads. And the best battery I've found is the Optima Blue Top. It's a little harder to find, but you know, the good news is a lot of the auto parts stores carry Optimas, and you can order the Blue Top Group 31. It's pretty unusual to find one in stock, but if you call them, you can usually get them in within a week. So the Optima Blue Top, three of those and the engine start module, and you are all set.
And what kind of warranty does it, does any Blue Top work, or is just mainly the Optima is what you found best with it?
Well, the Blue Top does refer to the Optima. The way they do their batteries, they have a red, yellow, and blue. The red is cold cranking amps. The yellow is kind of a hybrid, and the blue is what we would refer to as deep cycle. So it's the Optima Blue Top that is the real deep cycle battery that's best for hotel loads. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. We're going to get right back to some phone calls. Let's head off to Georgia. Steve, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Thanks for taking my call, and I appreciate everything you do. I got a two-part question I needed to ask you. First part is I have a 09 Cascadia with a DDAC 15 in it, and the problem I'm having is my fuel system. It's like if I set maybe like a couple of days, it's almost like I have to get under the hood to prime the system in order for my truck to crank up. Now, it happens if I get like 3/8 of a tank or below. That's when this happens and it sits a couple of days. But during, you know, as long as I'm continuing to move, or, you know, continue cranking and everything like that, I could get down to empty and it would still automatically crank up. And a lot of the shops that I took the truck to, you know, it's almost like they just guessing at it. And I was wondering, will the fast system, if I put the fast system on this truck, will that eliminate that problem?
It will, but actually, what it will do is cover up the problem, and I don't really want to do that. Now, I like the fast for a lot of reasons, and I would highly recommend you have one, but I would also recommend that you don't get the fast just to cover up this problem, that we solve this problem. And it's not always easy, and I think that's why shops kind of throw up their hands. Somewhere we've got a breach in your fuel system that's allowing you to lose prime. Now, it's not bad yet because, like you said, it takes a couple days. The tanks have to be low before this really happens. But we know somewhere in the fuel system there's a leak. Not a fuel leak, but an air leak in the fuel system that's allowing that prime to drop. How many miles are on this truck?
806,000 miles, and I had all of the fuel line replaced about a year or so ago.
Okay.
Trying to eliminate that problem. And the some of them is saying that it's the pickup tube that's inside of the tank that could be a possibility, but that I find that hard to believe because it only, it happens if I'm like 3/8 of a tank.
Right. It's possible it is in the fuel tank, and that's why this can be a tough thing to troubleshoot. Now, you've done one of the things I would have recommended. It was time to replace fuel lines anyway, and a lot of times we find that that solves the problem because the leak was somewhere in a fitting. If they've all been replaced and the problem still exists, then it might be in the tank. It could be in that pickup line. Now, again, the FAST is a good thing to have, and it will fix this because the FAST has its own electric pump that comes on as soon as you turn on the key. So if we've lost prime, the FAST will reprime the system. So it's definitely a good thing to have, and it will solve this problem, sort of. Kind of covers it up. And maybe we're just going to have to keep looking for this or wait till it gets a little worse. So if you were thinking about the FAST, there are lots of other benefits to it: fuel mileage, maintenance cost, performance, all kinds of reasons to have it. And it will kind of fix this problem.
Okay. And I can't order the FAST on from your store, right?
No. Now, that one you've got to go Pittsburgh Power or directly to FAST.
Okay. Okay, I would definitely do that. Now, my second question, I don't mean to take up much of the time, but my second question is that I paid my truck off up under a bad lease program this year, and I came over to Landstar. Now, in 2016, I'm projected to, make more, more revenue.
Right.
up on the Landstar, and so as far as what is your basic guidelines as far as withholding for tax and for tax and to send to the government and everything like that.
Yep. So first of all, congratulations on completing that lease and getting your name on the title and getting to Landstar. So here's a really good rule of thumb to keep you out of trouble. It's not going to be perfect, but it will get you really close and keep you from any nasty surprises with the IRS. Every week when you get your settlement from Landstar, look at the gross revenue before they take out any deductions. Now, this is the gross revenue to the truck before any kind of deductions at all. And multiply that number by 0.09. That's 9%. Mm-hmm. So you just take the gross, multiply it by 0.09, and set that amount aside. That's going to cover most of your taxes. It's virtually impossible to do this exact because everybody's tax situation is different. But 9% of your gross revenue will keep you really close.
Okay, I do appreciate it so much, and that sounds simple enough. And thank you for taking my call, Kevin. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Again, congratulations. I love seeing people, and I know it's not easy, and I know I, really bash the lease purchase programs, and I will continue to do that. People that are in them, I'd love to see somebody complete one, get their name on the title, and get out on their own. So amazing. Great stuff. Let's go to Pennsylvania. Nick, welcome to the program.
I have two questions, Kevin. First, I know initially you wanted to have your ebook out by Christmas. That has since come and gone. Is there a better projected date on this ebook?
Yeah, I am really, really close. Like, I need 6 interrupted hours because everything that needs to get finished now is on me. The whole team's been working on this, and I am really close. It was just once you get into the holidays, trying to get things done was difficult. So I within the first week in January, we will get this out. Now, we're going to launch it on a weekend, so I'd have to look at the calendar, but our first live weekend show in the new year, or maybe the second, just because I want to get through the holidays. So we're really close. The book is done. Really, one of the things I need to do is do one last final read through and edit on the book, and then I need to record the audiobook. That's why I need, you know, about six uninterrupted hours to get the audiobook finished. Then we have a couple details to wrap up, and we will release that. So we are really close.
Okay. My next question comes with tire pressure and temperature. I have the TST system, so I monitor not only ambient tire temperature, but pressure as well. And I've noticed as I put new drives on, my steers are, well, call them 70%, and I notice on a worn tire, my pressures dramatically are higher compared to on a newer tire. You know, after your cold startup, you get driving 20 minutes later, I notice a worn tire have dramatically higher pressure. Is there a specific correlation? Is there a sliding chart? Anything?
No, there really isn't a lot. Let me make sure I understand what you're saying. Are you talking about pressure going up higher or temperature going up higher or both?
Well, the temperature will go up, you know, usually 5 degrees within ambient is what I've noticed on everything. That's not my concern. It's the pressure that goes up. I start at, say, 110 all the way around the truck, and my steers will go to 130, but my drives will be 118.
Okay. Yeah, and that makes sense. And the reason is the steers on most trucks, each steer tire is carrying much more of the load than each drive tire is. So the drive tires have four tires to spread out that weight, and we just tend to get a little more weight on the steer tire itself. So it's not unusual to see that pressure go up more. There's a correlation between temperature and pressure, but it's not the only thing. The other thing that you'll notice is the lower your starting pressure. Now, yours is all the same, so that makes it pretty simple. But if the lower the starting pressure, the bigger the differential is going to be. What I mean is, let's say we like a really soft ride, and I know people who do this, so they'll put their drive tires at, say, 90. Well, that 90 might go all the way up to 115 when it gets, as we're going down the road. But if we started them at 110, they might only go to 120. So there's a bigger differential the lower we start that pressure. You might even want to think about bringing all of your pressures up to 120 and see what happens then. Let me get to a break. Be right back. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. Before the break, I was talking with Nick in Pennsylvania. I'm going to go back there. Nick, does that make sense?
It does. My concern, I guess, would be the tire wear at that point. My tires wear perfect. People are amazed how many miles I get out of a set of tires, but I do all the right things. And I've always ran 110. I run usually about 50,000 pounds total, run very light freight. What would be the benefit of me taking the pressures up to that, say, 118 to 120 range?
You might want to try, although if you're at 110 and you're really happy with your wear, then I would say don't mess with anything and don't worry about that pressure differential. Like I say, it's mostly because the individual steer tires are carrying more load than each individual drive tire. And if this is working and you have good tire wear, I would probably say just leave it alone.
Just leave it alone. Okay.
Yeah.
As a tire wears down farther, and I've noticed this, you know, as my steers are getting lower and lower, I see it gradually increasing. You know, it might only be a PSI or two, but I'm wondering, is there a correlation in the long term, you know, with, say, sidewall flex or something like that that creates a pressure?
You know, I guess it could possibly, it's almost the opposite of what we would expect. And the reason I say that is again, there's a correlation between temperature and pressure. And the more we wear out a tire, the lower the temperature should become, because the more we wear it out, the less rolling resistance it has. So the less friction, the less heat. So that it's almost the inverse of what we would expect. But I guess it's possible that as a tire gets older, the sidewall gets weaker and we get a little more flex. That would be the only thing I could think of right now, because it almost seems like we should see the opposite. But you're seeing pressures go up as the tire gets older. Maybe it is just the sidewall getting a little weaker.
And we're not talking a lot of pressure. We're talking 1, 2, maybe 3 PSI, you know, over 70,000 miles. But it's when you notice these things on a daily basis, when that moment that something just seems out of place, you know, you do the hard work and you'll know it before you have a massive issue.
Yeah, and that's what I love about watching these kind of things. You know, the TST system, I'm kind of the same way. I watch them all the time. I pay attention to what kind of things change. So it's good that you're doing that. A couple pounds, I don't think it's any big deal. The tires themselves can handle a tremendous amount of pressure. So if you're starting at 110 cold, you're not going to have a problem at all. And it sounds to me like this is really working well for you, like you've really got it dialed in. So I don't think I would screw around with too much. Let's go to Colorado. Michael, welcome to the program.
Hello, and happy holidays to you. Question about super singles. At which speed has anyone determined that these things stand up and wear down the center?
It's a progressive thing. At 60 miles an hour, they'll wear perfect. At 65, they do pretty good. It seems to me like it's around 68 and up that you start to get that center wear on the tire, which looks really bizarre. When you look at a tire, a wide single that's had this happen, you look at it and you go, how does that even happen? The edges are higher than the center of the tire. Definitely over 70. And the faster you go, the worse that wear pattern will become. I had an interesting situation when there was a time with my trucks that there was about 2 years that I wasn't actively involved. I had somebody else managing my trucks because I had so many other things going on. And I went back and I happened to look at all my records one day and I thought, my God, what happened to the fuel mileage on this truck? It just dropped off horribly. So I happened to be, and this was when we were traveling a lot, I happened to be near Florida. So we went down, I walked in, looked at the truck, and I immediately knew what was wrong because I had this horrible wear in the center of the wide singles. So I got in the truck, took it out and drove it. Now, my trucks have always been governed at 63 or less, and there was a time when they were all governed under 60. I got in this truck, and it would run 80, Somewhere along the lines, when it was in the shop, somehow the governor got taken off of it, and my driver never bothered to inform anybody, and I wasn't really watching the truck. So it was immediately evident. He was running this truck really fast, and you could see it in the wear. So it seems to me you start getting a little bit of excessive wear in the center at about 68, and the faster you go above that, the worse it's going to get.
Okay, I appreciate that info.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Let's see. Let's head off to Pennsylvania. Khalil, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hi, Kevin. How you doing?
Good. What can I help you with today?
When I park, a lot of times I get the chance to plug in the truck, and I wondered if I want to put in a charger to charge the batteries, what kind of charger do I need with the voltage and watts to keep the batteries charged overnight?
Yeah, there, you know, I was talking earlier about Optima batteries. Optima makes a really nice charger as well. But there are several. I mean, you can get pretty decent battery chargers at almost any automotive store. You don't want to get the cheapest they make. You want to get a multi-stage. So what that means is it will have a bulk charging stage, which means it just floods it with as much amperage as it possibly can to charge the battery as quick as possible. Then as the battery gets closer to being fully charged, it starts dialing back the amperage in multiple steps. Like I've seen four stage where they might have bulk charging, float charging, two more stages. Here's the best analogy I've heard to describe why we need to charge batteries this way. If you were to take a glass of water and you were to take a big pitcher and you were to try to pour as much water into that glass as fast as possible, what would happen is at the end, a lot of the water would splash out and you wouldn't be able to fill the last, you know, half or quarter inch of the glass. But if you pour real fast and then start slowing down, then you could bring the glass right up to the top without any splashing out. That's kind of what happens with the battery. We want to charge it quick in the beginning, but if we kept charging it like that, it would just keep spilling over and we would never get that top part of the battery charged. But
okay.
Any multi-stage charger, and like I say, you can go to any auto parts store, and I usually spend in the $100 to $150 range, and you can get a really nice charger for that price. But again, you want it to be a multi-stage.
Now, when you hook it up, do you hook it up to that based on the three batteries don't include the one for the starter?
Yeah, you don't want to put a charger on the starting module itself. You would put your charger on any one of the other three batteries and allow it to charge that way. The start module can pull power off the other three batteries. The only time I hook something directly to the start module itself is if, like, for example, my truck now has not been started in 3 months. So everything is going to be dead. The batteries will be dead. The ESM will be dead. I'll take one of those little jump start packs, and I'll hook it straight to the ESM, and the truck will fire right up.
Okay. All right. I appreciate that. I do have another question.
Sure.
At what time or what point do you know when you're supposed to file as a escort? What is the amount there they have to look for?
Yeah, so what, you know, this isn't an exact number, but it gives us a pretty good reference point. If you are paying tax, so the bottom line on the Schedule C is the number we would want to look at. Schedule C on your tax return. If the bottom line on the Schedule C is more than $65,000, it's probably time to start thinking about an S-Corp, and you would sit down with your tax preparer and go through the options and the possibility. Now, that's different than what might be on, say, a business report or a profit and loss, because it includes two big numbers, depreciation and per diem. But if that number is $65,000, you could probably save money by having an S-Corp. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right, a quick heads up. We're heading into the fourth segment. It's kind of borderline right now whether we have enough questions to do a second hour. So let's try this. If I can get enough questions right now, then we'll go ahead and do a second hour. So if you've got a question, a comment, a topic, press one on your phone right now. There they are. They're coming in. Still some time, though. If you press one, we will go ahead and do a second hour, and I will get to you. Here we go. Don't hang up at the end. I'm going to say goodnight, goodbye, all that stuff I always say at the end of a show, but we will come back and do a second hour. Here we go. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. If you need any help from us, our Tribe Care team is there to help you. If you want to ask a question off the air, give them a call, 855-800-FUEL, 855-800-3835. If you want to stay up to date on the things we're doing, projects, those kind of things, I always announce things here on the air, but we have a lot going on, and our email list and our text message list is one way for you to stay in touch. Real simple. Go to the website, letstruck.com. In the bottom left corner of the page, you'll see a sign up for our newsletter form. Takes 10 seconds to fill it out. And if you do that and you haven't already received it, I'll send you a free copy of my quarterly maintenance checklist. So go to the website, letstruck.com, bottom left corner, sign up for our newsletter. We will make sure that you know what's going on. Let's go to Iowa. Richard, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Just have a question on an IRP question.
Okay, shoot.
Okay, we bought this truck in January. We put it in service with another carrier in March, and now we're trying to get our plates and all to get, for our own authority. And the state of Iowa says that they need a state-by-state breakdown on every mile on that truck from 2014 until June of 2015.
Okay.
Okay, well, and since we were under a different carrier, filed us under a group deal, and they can't give us the state by state breakdown.
Just estimate. I mean, that's all this really is anyway. This isn't, if we're talking about fuel tax, in a fuel tax audit, they are going to want to know exact miles, but on an IRP, not so much. This is more of an estimate. So I wouldn't get too crazy about this. Doesn't anybody have a fuel tax report that we could access? Because that would certainly give you these numbers.
Not as far as I know.
Who files the fuel tax? The carrier?
The carrier.
They should have that report. I mean, I would think that, I mean, we're not talking about that long ago. So I would start there. If you could get a fuel tax report for those periods, then you have exact numbers. If they don't have them, I would just estimate and move on.
Okay. I mean, that's the only thing that's stopping us from getting our, you know, finishing up our authority.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I say, start with a fuel tax report. You may even be able to contact your IRP state or your IFTA state and see if they maintain those records. So try the carrier, try the state. Somebody should have a copy of that IFTA report. And if so, then you have all your numbers right there. If not, estimate this and move on from there. Let's go to Georgia. Brent, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Say, I listened to your show from Tuesday night. I downloaded it on the on-demand and listened to it. I was really interested about what you're talking about, what you learned and from your nutrition nutritional therapist practitioner
right.
class. I have someone in my life who has pancreatitis. She had her gallbladder removed a year before she was diagnosed with this, and also she's got this congestive heart failure, which seems to give her what they call a pseudocyst. It's a sac in her stomach that, you know, it's over her organs and everything. It's just, she retains water in there, and she has to go in and have it drained every once in a while.
Okay.
But it seems like, you know, what they've got her on is a high-sugar, low-fat, you know, protein diet, you know, regular protein or whatever, but they're just giving her tons of sugars. And she seems to be getting worse, not better. And I was wondering if there's something that you might know of, you know, because at this point, she's about ready to try anything just because whatever they're doing with her is not helping.
Yeah, and this is not unusual. It is amazing how backward some of our medical advice, and this is normal, common, everyday stuff. And once you start understanding this, you just shake your head and think, my God, how did we get so far wrong on this? The gallbladder is... It has a very specific function. It's there to control the release of bile salts from the liver, and we use bile salts to digest fats. Now, fats are critically important for health. That's why when people go on these low-fat diets, we see so many health issues. But there's two parts of getting enough fat in your body. One is eating enough. And two is digesting them properly. So what happens when they decide to cut out the gallbladder, which is a really bad idea, is that there's no more control of those bile salts. The way it should work is the bile ducts and the liver produce the bile. The gallbladder holds on to it, and it's like the control valve. So the gallbladder waits until it senses that you've eaten fat. And when you have, it releases the bile salts to digest that fat. Once the gallbladder is out, now all that happens is you get this constant drip of bile, which will do one of two things. It's either not enough to digest the fat that you ate, or if you're not eating fat, which is they always tend to put people who've had their gallbladder removed on a low-fat diet, now you've got this bile in your digestive system with nothing to do, and it's an irritant. So it causes all kinds of digestion problems. Our wisdom in the medical community says, oh, if this bile is causing a problem because you're not eating fat, we'll give you another drug and we'll just stop bile production completely. It is insane that we think this could ever work. It's not a surprise to getting worse. But the good news is this can be addressed, and it's not that hard. Now, I'm going to tell you what I think should happen, but I would really love to have her go see an NTP because they can test, they can try a couple different supplements, find out what's going to work best. But what will happen is you can take bile salt as a supplement with a meal. So if you eat a good, healthy meal with lots of good fat, then you would take the bile salts with that meal to help digest that fat. If you're not eating fat, then you don't take the supplement. So it's a very targeted supplement, and that's really going to help a lot because right now, whether she eats fat or not, she's just not going to digest them. She's not going to digest them well, and that's going to cause all kinds of problems. So again, have her keep working with her current doctors, but I would also have her go see an NTP. They'll do the testing, they'll try a couple different supplements, and they'll find the combination that's going to support this best. There's a pretty good chance. You can go to the website. She may end up traveling to, you know, more of a major city, but she should be able to find one, and they will make a tremendous difference. Like I say, if this becomes a problem, it's likely that the doctors will just prescribe her another drug to stop her bile production completely, and then she won't digest any fats, and she's going to run into all those problems.
That's what it seems like they've been doing, is just wanting to throw drugs at the problem.
Yeah.
And not...
Yep.
You know, is there something that, you know, that she could be helping to kind of bring down the inflammation of the pancreas, or?
Well, part of the reason there could be lots of reasons she's got inflammation, and that's what the NTP is going to track down. I could make some guesses. Part of my guess is that we need good fats in order to omega-3 fatty acids are what keep the inflammation down. She may not be eating enough omega-3, and even if she is, she's probably not digesting it. If we solve the digestion problem and fix the diet, all the other symptoms will go away. But the NTP will really dial in where to start and then go from there, and will actually solve problems, not just cover up symptoms. There's the music. I've got to get out of here. We'll see you next time. Thanks for joining me. Be safe, be profitable, be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right, we're going to do another hour. Here we go.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs,
back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. We take your calls and answer your questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, health and fitness on the road, getting started as an owner-operator, finding freight, working with brokers, becoming a carrier, buying and selling trucks, hiring drivers, building a fleet, you name it. We'll tackle it here on this show. All you have to do is pick up the phone and give me a call. We're going to get to those calls in just a little bit. It's that time of year. You know, I've been bugging you for a couple months now, but it's really getting critical. Don't wait this year on your taxes. Get 2015 wrapped up and get 2016 started right with a good bookkeeping or accounting program, so you can really run your business the right way. But right now, get your taxes taken care of. We can help you no matter what your situation is. Driver, fleet owner, owner-operator, your own authority, corporation, partnership, doesn't matter, LLC, We've got a program to help you. Let us get 2015 wrapped up, get you the best tax return ever, and get you started right on 2016 as well. All you have to do is pick up the phone and give us a call. It's 855-800-FUEL, 855-800-3835. Again, we have a program for everybody. Just give us a call. Let's get to some phone calls. Let's get started in New York. John, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. How you doing today? Happy holidays to you.
Happy holidays. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. All that good stuff. What's on your mind today?
Well, I got a kind of an odd problem with a trailer. I switch trailers every other day in my operation. And so sometimes I get nice new trailers, sometimes I get, we'll just say, rickety old trailers.
Okay.
This particular trailer that I'm under right now is a little rickety and a little old. And it's doing something very bizarre that I've never seen before. And I'm hoping maybe you can help me tell the shop what to be looking for and what to be fixing. Basically, when you shut down, usually between an hour and 2 hours after you, I've now pulled both of the brakes. The
okay.
trailer will surge forward.
Hmm.
And it is an air ride suspension. I think I know what's going on, but I'm wondering if you or maybe one of the other listeners might know for sure.
Huh. Yeah, you know, I wonder. Boy, I don't know. There are a couple things. When you say it surges forward, or explain that better.
I'll tell you exactly what happened to a take. I back into a dock. I unhook. I pull away. I get a call 4 hours later saying, hey, man, you got to back this thing into the dock. The thing is 4 or 5 inches away from the dock.
Yeah, which is the reason they put in the locking mechanism on docks, because air ride trailers specifically tend to do what's called dock walk. So it mostly happens, though, every time the tow motor goes in and compresses the airbags, then drives back out and the airbags release. And every time we compress and release those airbags, we get a little bit of a walk forward. Spring ride trailers don't tend to do that, but air ride, it's the way the suspension moves as we compress the airbags and then release and compress and release. But it's pretty unusual to have it happen when it's just sitting there. Is this after they've been going in and out of it, or it's just sitting there?
Well, last night when the trailer was hooked to the tractor, I pulled over, went to sleep for a couple of hours, and I don't know how long into it, maybe an hour or so into it, it felt like somebody slammed the back of the truck, and it woke me up. And I actually thought it was my imagination. And then when I, you know, dropped it in the dock and then pulled away and then saw that, you know, they may come back and push it back in, I said, well,
yeah,
that wasn't my imagination last night. So,
yeah, so
to me, it almost feels like it's dumping the hour later.
That's what it sounds like. Now, I wonder if you – one of the things you might want to test is that if you park this thing for an hour and you feel that surge or you think it happened, it would be interesting to see if you released the tractor brake but not the trailer, and tried to pull forward if the brakes would be engaged on the trailer or not. I'm almost wondering, something is either happening with the airbags with the leveling valve, or the brakes are releasing and allowing that to happen. I'm not sure which one, though.
Ooh, I didn't even think of that. That the brake would just release and re-catch again?
Yeah.
Hmm. Okay. Okay, I'll be under this one more night tonight, So I'll try that. And so you said after it's done the surge, then just start it up and try to pull forward and see if the trailer brakes are still locked.
Right.
And just release the tractor brakes, but not the trailer brakes when I do that, correct?
Exactly. Yeah, and that'll tell us whether or not those brakes are still engaged.
Okay, well, that is bizarre. I didn't even think of the brakes. I only thought suspension, but okay, this is why I called. Thank you.
You're welcome. And it could be either one. It's just a little odd. I would give that a shot, and let's just see if we can tell if maybe the spring brakes are just releasing. Let's go to Arkansas. Gerald, welcome to the program.
Yeah, how you doing, Kevin?
Good. What can I help you with today?
I'm looking at trying to increase my revenue this year. I think I bought all I can out of the company I'm with right now. I was looking at Mercer and Landstar. I'm trying maybe pull their trailers for a while to, you know, if I get, you know, accepted at Landstar. You know, they're a little hard to get with. But anyway,
got it.
I wanted their trailers for a while to see if it'd be beneficial to buy Sprinter.
Got it. Okay. So, now, did you say you're at Landstar or you're moving to Landstar?
No, I just applied to Landstar. I haven't got a response a couple years ago and didn't get accepted. But then I was thinking about Mercer, but Mercer, I pull drive-ins, but Mercer wants to lease trailers now, and I didn't see that coming. You know,
I've got your business report here, and some pretty interesting numbers. Your revenue, I just have to say, your revenue sucked. I mean, your revenue horrible. But the good news is, with such lousy revenue, you did a really good job of controlling your costs, and your bottom line wasn't that bad. I mean, we certainly want to improve it, but you did a really good job of squeezing as much profit out of this little bit of revenue as you could. Just to give you an idea, your total revenue per mile was only $1.05, but you managed to keep 36 cents of that. That's impressive. Now, going to either Mercer or Landstar, getting that revenue from $1.05 to $1.50 is kind of a slam dunk. I mean, you could do that with your eyes closed over there. And you knowing that you're good at controlling your cost, your profits should go through the roof at either one. So leasing the trailer at Mercer, not a bad deal at all. I've looked at the numbers. I like it. If you go to Landstar, I would just say buy one as soon as you can. I've worked out the numbers so many times at Landstar, I don't even have to think about it. Everybody who buys a trailer makes more money, and they're happier because they have their own trailer. They can take care of it. Nobody in all the years I've been doing this, helping people make this decision at Landstar, nobody has ever regretted getting their own trailer. Everybody worries. Oh, you know, I do some drop and hook stuff that I really like. I don't want to lose that. But everybody I've ever worked with that bought their own trailer over there is happy with it. So, you know, those are the two carriers we really work pretty closely with. So I'm familiar with both of their systems, and you can't go wrong with either one. And again, you've done such great work at controlling your costs. Once you get the revenue from either one of those carriers, you're going to be in much better shape. I've got to get to a break. We'll be right back with more calls. Don't go away. Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Before the break, I was talking with Gerald in Arkansas. I'm going to head back there and make sure we got your question answered. Gerald, did that help?
Yeah. My biggest thing with me and the trailer, I kind of looked at it, I'm about maybe 5 to a mile to leave that trailer at Mercer time, if I average even 120 miles a year. So I just wasn't sure if I thought that was a good idea to lease it, because we always trying to buy equipment versus lease it, because that's almost a $37,000 deal after you go through the whole lease program with that trailer over the 5 years.
Yeah, it's not necessarily the best way to acquire. I would much rather just go buy something on my own, but I've looked at their lease deal, and it's not horrible for what you're getting. You will still make more money. If you have the ability and the option to go out and buy your own, I always like owning equipment. But this lease on the trailer is very, very different from a lease purchase on a tractor. You own the tractor. We're good there. If you could own the trailer, that's even better. But this lease deal, I've looked at the numbers, and there's still more money to be made there. Let's go to Arizona. JR, welcome to the program.
Kevin, how was your vacation?
Wonderful. Thank you.
Get it all dialed in, get your head straight?
Oh, yeah. You know, I love this time of year for a lot of reasons, you know, the holidays. But for me, it's that time to kind of wrap up last year, look at what worked, what didn't, you know, set my priorities and plans for next year. And now I'm just kind of anxious to get the holidays out of the way and get back to work.
Yeah, I hear you. I've always done things kind of wait till the end of the year, get all my taxes done, then I go out and run and get everything paid by April. But this year I thought, you know what, I've had a pretty rough last couple of years, and I think this year I'm just going to go out on the road, come back in March, and worry about my taxes then. I mean, I'll have my profit gauges and all that done, ready to go, and I might even go down and talk to my accountant about it before I go back out on the road, but I'm not even going to worry about it till March, you know? I'm going to get a little bit different this year.
Yeah, well, but, you've got a plan. That's what counts.
Well, yeah, exactly. I'm just kind of turning everything upside down and doing everything a little different this year. I like a little bit of change. So I'm a truck driver. Get out there and see stuff, you know, it changes every day. But anyway,
that's right.
I've got a Fast system, and I've talked to those guys about it a little bit. And it's kind of a strange one. I put a Fast system when I did my signature motor last year. I put a Fast system on. Everything on that 03 Freightliner Columbia pulls out of the driver's tank. Then there's a transfer valve on top of the transmission that equalizes the fuel slowly as you go down the road. Well, I found out with this Fast system on there, pumping that 200 gallons an hour, that I would get a heavy load. You know, I'm a tollway, so I do a lot of light stuff. But every now and then when you get a heavy one, I would be driving down the road, and I'd be looking at my fuel gauge, and I would be down to, like, fumes. So I'd stop and jump out and say, what is going on? And I'd take a look in the driver's side tank, and you're right, it's down to 3 or 4 inches in the bottom. I go over to the passenger side, I'm half to two-thirds full. You understand where I'm going with this now?
Yeah, I do.
Now, my question is, I basically put a shutoff switch for my Fast system in the truck. So when I get a heavy load, I fired it up, I run it for a while, I shut it off, you know, and I'm thinking, well, I'm kind of defeating the purpose of that. Is there a simple way to fix this with a pressure switch or something? Or I'm not sure. I mean, what would be the easy? I don't know.
Yeah, here's the crazy thing about this issue of tanks not drawing or returning equally. I get this question, you know, 4 or 5 times a month, and I have since we started the show, and the solutions have been all over the board. It is amazing how many different things have caused this on different trucks and the ways that we either fix it or don't fix it. It's one of those just oddball kind of things that it's fairly common. It happens pretty regularly, but the solution never seems to be the same. And I've never been able to come up with a really good troubleshooting procedure. Like, if somebody calls me with an electrical problem, we have a pretty straightforward troubleshooting approach. If we have a tire wear problem, we know what steps to take to troubleshoot it. This one, though, just seems to be so inconsistent. I've had trucks that will do this just sporadically. You know, it might go a year without doing it, and then all of a sudden, I'll have the same issue you just had. You look at the fuel gauge, and you think, what the hell just happened? And you get out, and one tank is almost overflowing, and the other one's empty. And sometimes just opening up the two tanks and closing them and going back down the road solves it. So it seems like that would have been some sort of a venting issue. The fast...
Well, no, that mine is... That transfer valve, this happened to me once before, and that's where I learned all about this. That transfer valve is basically an equalization atmospheric pressure valve. And one time it did fail, and the little valves or whatever in there got messed up. And, yeah, I had a full passenger tank, and the driver's side was dry, and I was out of fuel. And
right.
That's when I learned about what this thing is. But it's such a slow transfer that this fast system pushing so much through, when I'm burning a lot of fuel, it just naturally returns the same amount of fuel to each tank. But guess what? I'm only pulling from the drivers. So it's not a sporadic thing. It's just when I start burning fuel, I know what's going to happen.
Right. Okay, so
and
yours
not,
is more consistent.
So, yeah.
So there. So now we have, there's three problems that can occur. One we just talked about, which is the two tanks equalizing. The other one can be we're drawing too much out of one or returning too much to another. So
right.
This is why it can be so inconsistent. So the guys at FAST didn't have any ideas for you?
The last time I talked to them, and then, like I said, they told me what they thought, and I started investigating. I've just kind of come to, I played with it the last 6 months of this year and found out what it was. And, you know, I can pull in at a quarter tank on the driver's side, go to sleep. I get up in the morning. Guess what? I'm back up to a little over half a tank.
Huh. So it is transferring. It's just doing it way too slow.
Yeah, it's just an atmospheric thing. There's no pump. There's no floats in there. It just one side's
right.
Fuller, it'll start feeding it back over to the other side. And it's just one of those. I'm just wondering if there's some type of a pressure switch that I could dial in so that I'm restricting the return flow to that passenger tank when I'm pulling a heavy load. You know, whether I get down there with the dial and just put so much pressure going through that pressure valve. Or I've kind of been thinking through it, and I just don't know what. I don't know if that's going to be damaging the FAST system, you know, overloading it or something.
Now, I just don't know of an absolute do this and it's going to fix it. This is one of those things that you've just got to play around with. I mean, you've got a good understanding of what's going on. But if the guys at FAST didn't have, you know, an absolute just do this and it'll fix it, I don't. And I think this is going to be one of those things you're just going to have to screw around with.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll touch base with them again and see if they've come up with anything now that I know what's going on. And I can pick their brain like I am yours right now, you know what I'm saying? Because I can then tell them, well, no, that's not happening. This ain't happening. I know exactly what's happening. How do we fix it?
Yeah. Yeah. So wish I had a better answer for you, but every time we have this problem, it seems to be a different fix. It's just not one of those things that it's easy to predict or troubleshoot. Seems like it should be, but it never works that way in the real world. I'm looking at the clock. I'm going to take us into a break, and when we come back, we'll get to more of your calls and questions. Couple things. If you want to get signed up for our newsletter, we've got a lot of stuff planned this year. I want to make 2016 the year we really give back. So I have a lot of ideas in the work. Some of them are already done, but most of them are going to revolve around free giveaways, things we can give back to you. And the first one we created is a maintenance checklist that I developed over the years and would use on the truck every quarter. So we lay out all the things you should be inspecting and looking at each quarter on your truck. This can really help lower overall maintenance, reduce downtime and headaches, and make that available to you free. All you have to do is just sign up for the newsletter. and we'll send you a lot of really good stuff. Like I say, we've got a lot of great projects planned for this year, and we can keep you up to date on what's going on. All you have to do is go to the website, letstruck.com, and on the bottom left corner of the home page, you will see it's a sign up for our newsletter. It takes 10 seconds, and that'll put you on the list. If you're not sure if you're on the list, go ahead and fill it out anyway. We won't sign you up twice. We'll check. The system will check if you're already there. No harm, no foul. But make sure you're signed up. We have a lot of great stuff coming. Letstruck.com, bottom left corner of the home screen. Stick around. We'll be right back with more stuff. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. I'm going to get right back to some phone calls. Let's go to Missouri. John, welcome to the program.
Air Tax Now.
Absolutely. What can I help you with today?
I have a scan gauge here in my truck, and I've been coasting down a couple of hills, these long rolling hills here in Missouri, and I'll get all nines across the instant MPG. And then I'll get a whole bunch of dashes. So I'm wondering if it's just higher so it can't calculate, or if it's not calculating at that period, putting it towards my average. I'm just wondering if you have any idea.
Yeah, it's still calculating. What's happening, though, is when the throttle position sensor is at zero, meaning you're not pressing on the accelerator at all, there is no fuel going into the cylinder. So
right.
There is no true number to calculate. I mean, it's okay. Infinity. Yep. If you could post forever, then you would use no fuel. So it can't, there is no number to produce. So you'll either see all nines or just dashes. And all it's telling us is the truck's just not burning any fuel at all right now.
Ah, gotcha. That's kind of what I was thinking, but just wasn't 100% sure.
Yeah, so the only average will still be correct because it's still registering the miles you're traveling, the distance, and it's just showing zero fuel being used. So your average is still being calculated correctly.
That's the only question I had. I was just a little confused on that. Thank you very much for making that clear.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Let's head off to Pennsylvania. Brian, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. I was wondering if you had any suggestions as far as where to start looking for a place to put an HSA account and also to provide payroll, getting started as an S-Corp.
Got it. Okay, couple things here. Let's do the S-Corp first. Have you determined, are you an S-Corp already?
No.
Okay, so you, and this is a good time of the year because you've got to do this at the beginning of the year and you've got some time. Do you have a tax preparer or an accountant that you're comfortable with?
Yeah, I'm working with Marcus, and I have the LLC stuff started. I'm just waiting
good.
To get it back.
Good. Well, that and keep working with Marcus And, you know, we'll certainly get you set up and get that whole process going, get your payroll set up. Was there a specific question about payroll?
Yeah, I don't even know. I didn't get that far with Marcus yet. I don't know if CLA does payroll.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, we can set you up, and we make it really simple. So we'll probably set you up on just doing payroll once a month. We'll set it up on a salary, and that way your taxes are taken care of. It's the same every month. And then as you are more or less profitable, you just adjust the amount that you draw out. So payroll will stay the same all year. It makes it nice and simple. We just do it once a month. And then you make up the difference through your draws. Let Marcus and CLA take care of that. They'll get you all set up. And, shoot, what was the other question?
HSA account.
Yes. Do you currently have an HSA, or do you currently have health insurance that qualifies for an HSA?
The latter. I'm changing plans on January 1st, because, you know, Obama said if I like my plan, I can keep it, but that's been not true at least twice.
Yeah, no, it's same thing for me, so I feel the pain. The company that you are getting your policy through, do they also offer the HSA account in combination with the health insurance?
My agent said she didn't believe so for an individual plan.
Okay, got it. So what you need then is what is called basically an HSA administrator. It used to be really common that the insurance company would do both parts. So when you have an HSA, you have insurance, plus you have an account where you put your own money in. And it used to be really common that the insurance company would do all of it for you, and it was nice and simple. With Obamacare, everything has gotten more complicated. So now what you need is an HSA administrator. Do you have a retirement account?
Yeah, I actually have two, and they're both kind of dormant. You know, I need
That's okay. Do you know, like, who they're through, like Vanguard or T. Rowe Price or?
Oh, my. I think one's Merrill Lynch, and the other one might be Vanguard.
Okay, so I'd like to keep things simple, and we would first start by asking your insurance company if they administer HSAs. If they do, we just keep it there. It's easy. If they don't, but you have retirement accounts, then I like to go to those places, because almost all of the companies that manage retirement accounts also manage HSAs. Vanguard for sure does. Merrill Lynch does. So if your insurance company doesn't do this, I would check the two places where you already have accounts. I hate to get accounts opened all over the place. I like to keep things simple. So I would check. Go look at your retirement accounts, even if you're not using them and they're inactive. See who has those and call them and ask them if they administer an HSA.
Sounds good. Thanks, Kevin.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. And like I say, most of the mutual fund companies' retirement accounts will also have HSAs available. I just like to keep things simple. Let's go to Milwaukee. Pete, welcome to the program.
Yeah, how you doing, Kevin?
Good.
Can you take a look at my chart? My cholesterol doubled, and I know you had a call a couple months ago before I started on my diet, and the person had the same problem. It's just I don't remember the answer.
Okay. Yeah, let's take a look. So while I'm looking at this, give me some history, kind of a timeline of, you know, had you checked these numbers before and then changed your diet, and give me an idea of what's been going on.
The last test that you see in front of you, that's the one that I've been on my diet since August 4th. So what do you call it? It's been about 4 months. And prior to that, what do you call it? The history is there. But it's gone. My cholesterol has gone up. But, you know, looking at some of the other numbers, I don't really know what they all are, but some of them seem to gotten better, like my triglycerides and stuff like that has come down. So I thought that was a good thing. It's just that my cholesterol went up from 220 to 443, if I remember right.
Maybe I'm not looking at the most current then. I'm seeing the report where total cholesterol was 220, and you're saying you have one now where it's...
Okay, that one's what you call the previous one. What do you call that? That probably was in August of this year. What you want is the December one, 12/28/15.
Okay.
12/20/15, excuse me.
Let me see if I have that. Doesn't look like I've got the newest one. I'll tell you what we want to look for. Do you have them in front of you?
I do.
So look at the one, the newest one, the most recent one, and look under, so when you see your results, you have triglycerides, cholesterol, HDL, LDL, and then the next line says CHOL/HDL ratio. Do you see that number?
Yep. Mine's 9.4.
9.4. This is bizarre. So the call you referred to, we had the same thing happen, and I don't know why. And this is one of those times, it's really rare. It's less than, you know, like 1% of the people we see this happen. And this is where having a full evaluation done could tell us a lot. The music's playing. I'm going to get to a break. We'll come back and talk about this. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're down to the final segment. I'm going to get right back to the phone calls. I was talking with Pete in Milwaukee. Pete, one of the conditions that can occur, and it's pretty rare, and sometimes it's aggravated by a high-fat diet, but not always, is what's called, I'll make sure I get this right, familial hypercholesterolemia. And what it means is that it's a genetic thing that causes crazy high cholesterol numbers, like off the chart numbers, which is kind of what we're seeing in your latest report. Have you ever been diagnosed with that, or has the doctor ever addressed that?
No.
Okay. We might want to have that checked. Tell me a little bit. You said you started on this diet in August. Give me an idea of what you would normally eat in a day.
The main thing is eggs and some bacon. And what I call it, there's days that I just do the oil and coffee, and that's it for the day. I can usually last that way about 3 days. then I'll go back to some eggs, what do you call it, and bacon, and that's about ham and cheese omelet with tomato slices, and that's it.
So one of the things you might want to start increasing is your consumption of vegetables. You know, you're getting good fats, your protein's probably fine. Other than the cholesterol numbers, how has this been working for you? Have you seen improvement in other areas?
Oh, God, yeah. I got energy coming out of my butt.
yeah.
I mean, that level, what it got, is just unreal compared to what I used to have. My skin, what it got, has gotten softer than heck. You know, my
good.
Bottom of my used to be like sandpaper, now almost like a baby's butt. So, you know, I see a lot of benefits, you know, to this so far, you know, and I don't see it as a diet anymore. To me, what it got, it's not that hard to stay on it.
Right.
I like it. You know, like you said, the only downfall every once in a while, I got so much energy. I'm walking it around in the truck stop at 10:30 at night trying to burn off some energy.
yeah. But, well, that's good then. Your body is responding well to this. Every once in a while, we get these weird cholesterol numbers. My recommendation would be really to find an NTP. Now, keep working with your doctor, but find an NTP. Doctors, when they see high cholesterol numbers, the first thing they want to do is put you on a statin, put you on some sort of a drug. They don't even try to figure out why. That's the way they've been trained. The NTP is going to look at your results, look at your diet, look at your other symptoms, and really address what might be causing this and then fix it, not just cover it up. So if you go to the website nutritionaltherapy.com, and they have a menu item there where you can look up practitioners by address and zip code. And I would highly recommend you schedule a consultation with an NTP, not just for this issue, but they're really going to help you dial in a lot of other areas. You've made a lot of big improvements and you're seeing the benefits. The NTP is really going to tweak that and dial it in. And also, they'll be able to address these cholesterol numbers better than I can right now, because I just don't have enough information. But again, the doctors will just freak out and want to put you on medication. Let the NTP really look at this and see what's going on with that. Let's go to Indiana. Mark, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. How are you doing?
Good. Can I help you with today?
A couple of things. I've got a couple of tax questions, but I wanted to start off with a thank you. I made it to the CMC last year. I really wanted to go, and I was willing to pay for it. I got it in a little late so that I was beyond it, and I was the lucky one that got there for free.
Oh, fantastic. Can't beat that deal.
No, it really was. I would have been willing to pay twice the price for it. And I got in for free, went through the program, really excited about it. And it was right at the start where I was moving from a company driver to almost an owner-operator, not quite. I'm working for a man that you know, Dave Morales, and his small fleet,
yeah,
giving me some mentorship in the Lion Star program.
Excellent. Dave is another CMC success story that I absolutely love. Dave came, he's been multiple years now. He brings people back. He's gone from struggling in the industry to building a great fleet and paying it forward and helping other people do the same thing.
That's exactly what he's doing for me. I would love to talk about some of that, but I do have some tax questions.
Sure.
My first year as a 1099 operator, sole proprietor, and I'm pretty sure of some of the answers and very unsure of some of the other answers. Hotels, I'm assuming lodging on the road 100% is as a deductible as a business expense. Is that correct?
Completely deductible. You are correct. And there's no limit. It's what you actually spend. Now, there are some people, and they believe that because you have a sleeper on your truck, you're not allowed to deduct hotels. Absolutely incorrect. If you wanted to stay in a hotel every single night of the year that you were out, you can do that, and it's all deductible.
Very good. That was what I thought you had said previously, and I wanted to make sure. Now, my next question is, I do not have a personally owned vehicle. So I can't do mileage or anything like that when I am on the road. If I'm staying somewhere, if the truck's broke down, or if I'm just staying somewhere, I rent a car. What would the deduction, what would the business deduction be for that?
Everything you spend. So you go to the car rental place, and you get a daily rate, and then on top of that, you decide to throw in insurance, and then on top of that, you have to pay for your fuel. Everything you spend to rent that car is completely deductible.
Okay. And at home, what would be my home? I don't have one. Would that be the same, or would it be different? Would it only be when it was used for business?
This is kind of a gray area. I'll tell you what.
Agreed.
I would do. Yeah, I would take everything I spent on rental cars no matter where I was. And my justification would be when I'm home, I need the car for business. Now, I may end up using it personally, but we're not going to, you know, split hairs here. I would just, and the odds of this being questioned are slim to none. If it was questioned,
agreed,
we'd still justify it. So I would say every time you rent a car, no matter where you are, I would just deduct it all.
Very good. And then with Audible, I've got a monthly, you know, $23 thing. A lot of it's business books. A lot of it, to me, is business, but might be construed as entertainment or something. Do I need to break down what I actually, you know, because it's credits, not money so much.
Right.
My assumption is I'm just going to put every month of Audible and make it a deductible.
That's what I do. If this really came down to an audit and they wanted to nitpick and they actually went through your titles, then they...
It would be a few bucks and okay.
Exactly. Yeah, that's kind of my thought. I do the same thing you do. A lot of my books are business, but I occasionally read novels. But I'm not going to go in there and try to split this out and figure out what was what. I just take my monthly allowance, deduct the whole thing. Again, in an audit, the odds of them digging down into this are really slim. And if they do, and they make us give back a couple, not going to be that big of a deal.
Agreed. And I'm not in any sort of situation where I'd be an audit candidate.
Most owner-operators aren't. We're at that threshold where audits are really rare at this level. And if they happen, they're not always that in-depth anyway. There's the music. That means I've got to get out of here. We'll see you next time. Thanks for joining me. Be safe. Be profitable, be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey. Kevin Rutherford, good night, everyone. I'm going to go to the next one.
All right, everybody. Thanks for joining us. We are going to try to do a full schedule of recording this week. So tomorrow, 2 hours. And then on Wednesday, an hour of Pittsburgh Power and an hour of Destination Health. So join us for those. Thanks.